Hello, this is Josh Hankin from Sandbag Fitness Systems, and today is a very special day because I get to have an old friend and one of the best known coaches in the whole nation, Mike Mahler, is joining us today. Mike is probably best known for being one of the leaders in promoting kettlebell fitness and strength conditioning, but you know, today we're going to get him on some special stuff, so I want to welcome Mike. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today.
Oh, thanks a lot, Josh. It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure to work with you.
And, Mike, you know, I've known you for quite some time, and, you know, some of the stuff that you've been doing recently has been really interesting. I mean, people have really jumped on the kettlebell bandwagon, and, you know, I'm sure you have lots of thoughts on that. But I wanted to sort of take a different course with you today because I think some of the other information that you're discussing and really trying to promote and understand is almost more fascinating, and that's really has to do with hormone production, nutrition, and how that performance and overall health. So I guess I just want to start off with, like, how did you get interested in that aspect and what made you turn into such a focus with the whole hormones and how it relates to overall health?
Oh, sure. No problem. It's kind of funny because it's become a personal obsession more than anything else at this point. And I never really saw it coming. It's one thing where I had kind of a superficial interest in it. As a trainer, you kind of want to understand what things you can do to help get your clients better results. And clearly, a lot of men always want to know, how do you optimize testosterone? Women want to know, how do I optimize estrogen? How do I optimize fat-burning hormones and whatnot? So that kind of began the process there, is you kind of want to understand the whole hormonal picture with regards to training specifically. And then, personally, I went through some what I call andropause-type symptoms when I started my business, actually. I just went through a lot of stresses, financial, personal, and whatnot. I was under a lot of stress from different avenues, and I basically had adrenal fatigue. Adrenals probably shut down. I didn't have it tested, but my cortisol levels were really high to the point where I crashed hard. I developed a really bad case of pneumonia where both of my lungs got completely filled up with bacteria, and this is on the way to Uganda to visit my parents, who were living out there at the time on a plane ride. So I landed out there, and they had to rush me to a hospital immediately to pull out all this fluid that had filled up in my lungs. So I realized very strong and in a very compelling fashion the end result of not handling stress. This is where you're going to end up if you have stress management that spills over to a point where you can no longer manage it. And it's an extreme example, but a lot of people aren't that far from it and don't even realize it. They're living off of coffee, they're sleeping 3 hours a night, and they somehow think they're getting away with it. But the bottom line is you're going to crash really hard at some point. So anyway, after crashing really hard, I lost 30 pounds of muscle. It took me some time to really build all that stuff back on. And I just didn't feel good either. Sex drive was really low. Mood was very low. And zeal for life was low. And those are not things that I had experienced before. Usually I'm very high in all those areas. So this got me delving into, why are these things happening? And are other people experiencing things like this? And I started looking at how things affect the whole hormonal picture. And the more I studied hormones, the more I realized that hormones are basically a snapshot on how healthy you are. So in other words, you're only as healthy as your hormones, and not just one hormone, not just testosterone or insulin or cortisol. There's a whole symphony of hormones that we have, and they all need to be optimized. And optimized means they're in the right range for you as an individual. So what's good for one person is not necessarily the ideal for another. One person may have what looks like low testosterone, but for that person feels great. But if someone else had the same exact numbers, they're going to feel terrible. So it's a very complicated area. And a lot of people are putting out superficial information, which I find really irritating, where they say, look, just eat properly and work out and don't even worry about it. And that sounds good in theory, but the reality is it's much more complicated than that. And we can't just have these superficial answers for complicated issues. So that the more I looked into it, the more I realized that I don't really understand this whole thing like I thought I did. And also, it's a lot more than just optimizing testosterone. As trainers ourselves and as trainees, like you and I love to work out. We want to be stronger and put on some size and feel good and be confident and ready to go. So we're always thinking about, how do we optimize testosterone? But in reality, there's a lot more that has to come into play to not only maximize testosterone, but just maximize the whole hormonal picture so that you feel great and get the most out of your workouts and just have a good mood. More importantly, you want to feel good. And if your hormones are in a decline, which often happens to people as they get older, but nowadays it's happening a lot to younger people because of environmental toxins and stress and a lot of other things that we could spend hours getting into. But if your hormones are not in the ideal range for you, you're not even close to being at your best. So the more I look into this, the more I really want to understand all of the mechanisms on how to optimize hormones naturally, what are the different protocols that people can look at, and just give us, just research as much information as possible to benefit my clients and myself.
And I think that, you know, one reason I wanted to track it down is because I think it's so pertinent at this time when, I mean, people are so stressed out, you know, with the economy, which relates to their jobs,
absolutely,
which then carries over to their home life, which then carries over their sleep patterns and their eating habits. So, you know, for a lot of people that are probably feeling exactly everything you just mentioned, you know, how does someone go about, you know, a self-diagnosis? Where does someone start if they feel like they're sort of fitting into this category of having hormonal issues?
Well, I often encourage people to get blood work done or saliva work, and but that can be costly, it can be expensive, and a lot of times insurance doesn't cover it. So for a lot of people, it's just not a viable option, especially now, as you said, in our economic decline, the last thing you're going to do is blow $800 on some blood work, especially if you don't feel that you necessarily need it. Now, here's the thing, especially with men. Men don't like to go to doctors. Men don't like to do blood work. And men often don't like to admit they have problems. Women are often much easier to push in the right direction because they're more open to actually taking the advice. If they're not feeling good, they want to understand why and actually do something about it. Men often feel like, okay, this is just something I have to suffer with. So if my sex drive is really low, I'm just going to deal with it. Or if my energy sucks, I'm just going to deal with it. Or if my workouts are going down the drain, I'm just going to be a man and deal with it. And you're just cheating yourself when you do stuff like that, because when you know how good you can feel, when you get everything dialed in, you never want to go back to feeling weak and tired and just not enthusiastic about life. There's just no way to live your life. So, I mean, you basically have to look at, to self-diagnosis would be, for men, how high is your sex drive? Because sex drive is very pertinent to health. I mean, we're basically a reproductive species. So when we're healthy, we're in a reproductive mode, which means that we have a high sex drive and high sex function. So if you have a very low sex drive, and let's say you have low sex function as well, then you're in a pretty bad state, and you need to do something about it, not just suffer with it. And popping Viagra and Cialis is not the answer. What you need to do is figure out why you're in that state. Is it age-related? Is it stress-related? Are you sleeping at night? Maybe you're overtraining. Those of us who like to work out, we're kind of the opposite of the regular population. Average Joe, you don't really have to worry about him overtraining because just getting him off the couch is the goal, right? But those of us who like to train, we're a different kind of species because we tend to overdo it because we love the stimulus of training. That's good to a degree, but when you take something too far, now you're basically destroying the optimization of hormones that can come from training. Now you're actually compromising it because your cortisol is going up, your GH is going down, your testosterone is going down, your DHEA levels are going down now because your cortisol level is going up, you're in a stress state. So you basically have to look at how are you feeling, how is your sex drive, and this is relevant to women as well. And just how is your zeal for life? Do you wake up ready to go, or do you wake up and go, oh, man, another day I got to suffer through. You know, my life sucks. I hate my job. You need to start changing these things. You can't just accept these things. And I think too many people just accept circumstances, which is just shameful, in my opinion, especially in the United States. Even in our economic decline, there is always something you can do to change your life in no better place than America. So, I mean, it's one thing if you're in a third world country and you have a disease and you're living on the streets naked, you don't have a dime to rub together. But in America, there's always opportunities and there's always avenues to really improve yourself. So if you have a job that you hate, in my opinion, you have an obligation to find something you want to do and take the necessary steps to do that. And I've been there personally. I've done jobs I didn't like, jobs that paid well, and they just weren't fulfilling at all. And you're not going to have an optimal hormone environment when you're doing something that's unfulfilling. And I don't have any science to back this up, but it's pretty obvious that people who hate their lives probably don't have an optimal hormone environment unless they're taking hormone replacement, and that's not the solution either. That's not what I'm pushing towards.
Well, and Mike, do you think that, you know, a lot of people, I know right now you mentioned, you know, some of the more popular infancy drugs and so forth, but there's, I think almost as popular or more so is the whole prescription for depression. And what you're describing and what you're discussing sounds like, you know, things that people could easily diagnose as depressive, and, you know, then they've jumped on with Zoloft and Prozac and so forth.
Exactly.
Do you think, you know, some people are getting misdiagnosed as to what the actual problem is?
A lot of people are getting misdiagnosed. You bring up a great point, a really, really good point, and this is what happens when, you know, I'm not some anti-doctor. I'm not one of these guys who says, forget the medical industry and all that stuff. I have a lot of respect for doctors. I consult with a lot of doctors myself who are specialists in hormone optimization, and a lot of really smart doctors and open-minded people out there. That's one side. The other side are physicians who basically went to medical school and then their learning stopped once they graduated. And then the only information they have is from pharmaceutical reps that are coming into their office and selling them drugs to prescribe to their clients. They're not keeping up to date with a lot of the research out there. And it's not necessarily their fault entirely because they're busy running their practice or working at a hospital and whatnot. Okay, but where it's not excusable is when a patient comes in and he says, I'm depressed. And you don't even ask about the life circumstances. You don't even ask about whether the person hates their job, their diet, their you don't even look at their blood work and you say, you know what, just take this Prozac and see you next week. That's unacceptable. That's malpractice, in my opinion, and that's disgraceful and shameful that you're taking the life of your patient so casually. We need to be a lot better than that. So in my opinion, it's well worth a patient's time seeking out a really good doctor, even if you have to pay more, and not necessarily an anti-aging doctor, but a doctor that actually cares and is willing to invest in your health and take the time to determine with you why things are the way they are and what you can do about it, both from a drug standpoint and maybe from a alternative medicine standpoint, because there's merits of both sides. I'm not one of these anti-drug guys, but I think we've become a prescription society where anytime we have a problem, we just want to sugarcoat it with a drug. Sex problems, just take Viagra or Cialis. You got depression, just take Zoloft or Prozac. You've got irritable bowel syndrome, just don't worry about what you're eating, just take this pill. And we have people out there that are younger and younger that are just taking tons and tons of pharmaceuticals, and it's just not what you want to do to optimize yourself and feel at your best. I mean, that's not the solution. You're just sugarcoating, and you need to dig deeper into what the underlying causes are for things and go from there.
And what you're discussing isn't only for adults, because I think, you know, it sounds very, you know, important to kids as well, because we're seeing, obviously, young women, you know, hit puberty earlier and earlier, young boys having, problems with development.
Yeah.
So do you think there's relevance to that as well for, you know, we're not talking just adults, right?
No, unfortunately, we're not. We're talking about really young people. I have clients that are in their 20s who I've looked at their blood work, and they have abysmally low testosterone levels. And that's amazing to me because think of back when you were 18 or when you were 20. I mean, those are the years where, you know, you can work out 7 days a week and sleep 4 hours a night and go party on the weekends and still make progress on a suboptimal diet. And what's happening here is and still have good hormone levels and healthy sex drive and all that stuff. So, I mean, those are your years where you're basically at your best and you can get away with a lot. But what we're seeing is younger and younger people who are having basically a hormonal picture of someone that's 20 years older than them. So you can basically be 30 years old, but physiologically you're 50 based on your hormones, and maybe if you look further, your glands are not working as efficiently as they should be. So it's pretty scary stuff in a lot of ways, because you wonder what's going on in our world and what we're being bombarded with on a daily basis that's causing a lot of these things. And there's so many different factors, but the key is you have to fight back and take charge of these things. Like any other facet of your life, whether it's your business or your training or whatever you want to do, you have to personally take charge of it rather than wait for someone else to come along and be your savior. And I just wanted to harper back one point about depression is I'm not a doctor, and I make that very clear. I'm a researcher. I research this stuff extensively. I consult with a lot of doctors and so forth. So I'm not making medical recommendations to people when they come to me. I look at their hormones and look at that information to help me design proper programs for them. Because if someone has really low GH and low T, I don't want to put them on a high-volume program that's just going to make the problem a lot worse. So to me, it gives me very good information to help me design stuff for them, and then also point them in the right direction and say, hey, you know what, your levels are really bad here. I would highly recommend you go work with this person to see if there's anything you can do about it. Here's what I would do if I were you diet-wise and so forth. You know, I'll help them out from those ends. But obviously, I'm not making medical recommendations. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an MD. But if I were and I had a patient that came in and he told me that he's really depressed, I would not just give out a pill and say bye-bye. I would say, okay, we need to do some extensive blood work. Also, I want to know what exactly is going on in your life. Did a close friend die? Did you get out of a bad relationship? Did you go through a big breakup? what stresses are going on in your life. Are you in a job that you hate? Are you sleeping 3 hours a night? I mean, what exactly is going on lifestyle-wise? What's your diet like? Let's take a look at your maybe your minerals are low, your vitamins. And then let's also do some blood work to see where you are hormonally, because if your testosterone is really low, getting that testosterone up is a natural antidepressant. You're going to feel really good. And there's a lot of MDs out there who like to say that there's no connection between ideal testosterone levels and muscle growth and feeling good. And that's just ridiculous to me that these people make these kind of comments. And some will even say, you know, as you get older, your levels are supposed to go down. It's the natural aging process. You know, you're going against the natural aging process. Well, these arguments about what's natural are so stupid that it's ridiculous. I mean, what exactly are we even doing in life that's natural? We drive cars, we live in houses, we cook food, we sleep in beds. I mean, none of these things are exactly right. Natural. What are we going to do? We're going to go back to the jungle and just grab a spear and sleep under a tree? Fine, go do that if you want to be Mr. Natural. But we don't live in a natural world anymore anyway, so trying to say that it's funny how people like to say, look, I don't want to do anything that's not natural, but it's okay to do all these other things like drink 10 cups of coffee a day and take ephedrine and take super high doses of vitamins, this, that, and so forth. And then in one area say, oh, well, that's not natural. You know, it's basically a cop-out. Just because you're getting older doesn't mean that you just have to let things fall apart. And I think we have this mentality of, well, as I get older, I'm just going to fall apart. And, of course, we're all going to age and things are going to decline, but there's a lot we can do about that now rather than just sitting back and taking it.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it sounds like you're recommending a proactive approach to everything. And, you know, I couldn't think of anything to be more proactive about, more so than nutrition. So, you know, that seems like something someone could start tomorrow on. So do you have some general recommendations that people could do to start, you know, enhancing what the work they're doing right now, you know, if they want to get off this phone call and make changes tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely. With nutrition, you basically want to make sure that you're getting at least 25 to 30% of calories from healthy fat sources, such as olive oil, avocados, nuts and seeds. I really like Udo's Choice Oil. I think you use that as well. You know, some people really like fish oils and so forth. So you want to make sure you have a good amount of fat in your diet, because fat gives the building blocks to create hormones. So if you're on a really low-fat diet, which used to be popular a long time ago, you're not going to have adequate hormone production. That's just the way it's going to be. So naturally, one of the things you want to do is make sure you have a good amount of healthy fat. You want to avoid unhealthy fats, though, such as soy oil and corn oil and trans fats and cooked fats, fried fats, things like that. Saturated fat, you don't have to be paranoid about it, but you don't want that to be the highest percentage of your fats. And maybe 5 to 10% of that 30 comes from saturated fat sources. You need some saturated fat, which also helps with hormone production and even joint health and just energy and so forth. I like coconut milk, coconut oil for that. As a vegan, I don't eat any animal products, so that's a good source of some saturated fat for myself. So that's very important. And basically, you have to get over the psychological notion that if you eat fat, you're going to get fat, which is just not true. You want to look at what's going to create an optimal hormone environment. And if you're on a low-fat diet, you're not going to have an optimal hormone environment, which means you're not going to have optimal muscle production and you're not going to have optimal fat loss, because you need to have optimal growth hormone and testosterone to achieve those both. You're not going to get big and strong and lean without an optimal hormone options. Now, there's guys who bulk up, say, you know, I put on 30 pounds in a month, but if you really look closely, you'll see that most of it was fat, and they don't look very good. Because when you put on that much weight naturally, we're not talking about someone using steroids here, but someone just puts on 30 pounds who's been training for a while, chances are it's not 30 pounds of high-quality muscle. It takes a long time to really build that dense, high-quality muscle that looks good. So anyway, back to fat, 30% there. Get over the notion that fat makes you fat. It's excess calories that do. We've always known that. So let's make sure we have some good fat in our diet. Then, of course, you want to have good quality protein sources for a healthy brain, for muscle tissue. Obviously, you need good protein. And organic is always best. So if you're a meat eater, if you're better off eating less quantity of high-quality stuff than just going for quantity. So in other words, pay the extra money you need to get that grass-fed beef. Pay the extra money to get that raw milk as opposed to just getting the garbage at the regular grocery store, which may be 10 times cheaper, but you're not giving your body the same level of nutrition. So another thing is people often feel like they have to eat a lot of calories to put on some size. And the reality is what you want to focus on is feeding yourself the best nutrition possible. 2,500 calories of really good, solid nutrition from really good sources is going to have a much better impact on your body and your well-being than 5,000 calories, where a lot of it is just junk.
They agree with you.
And then carbohydrates, my recommendation on carbohydrates is, I don't believe in low-carb diets. I don't believe in high-carb diets either, low-carb being less than 20% of overall calories, high-carb being over 60%. And focus on fruits and vegetables. I mean, you should basically get the majority of your carbohydrates, if not all of it, from fruits and veggies, with a greater emphasis on veggies, and in particular, green leafy vegetables.
I think those are some good, solid recommendations. And I want to go somewhere because, you know, I think this is a topic that, you know, obviously everyone gets crazy about nutrition, and there's so much information. But I just want to skim over some real basic stuff, too, you know, from both genders' perspective, because I know probably the sexes look at nutrition very differently, too.
Sure.
You know, women tend to be, you know, big carb people, very scared of fat, but they also tend to be those that are very all the time and sort of soft and their estrogen's high. Is there a relationship to how women tend to like to eat and, you know, basic problems that they often experience like that?
Yeah, women definitely crave sugar more than men do. That's very common, especially during certain periods of the month and so forth. And there's definitely a hormonal basis for that. So if you can optimize hormones with women, you can help address some of those sugar cravings and whatnot. The cleaner their diet, the better. Women's physiology and hormones, that's way more complicated than men's. And I'm focusing on the male side, of course, because I'm a man and it's much easier to learn that stuff than the women's side. But the women's side is way more complicated. For the most part, the principles will all carry the same. But what's interesting is that how certain foods have a different impact. Like alcohol can lower testosterone in men, but it can actually raise testosterone in women. So next time you go to a nightclub, just buy the drinks for the women and, you know, just stay away from it yourself. But that's just an example right there. And then there's things where, like, if a guy takes DHEA, it can convert into estrogen. In fact, that happens more often than not, especially if you take too much. Well, if a woman takes DHEA, it tends to convert into testosterone a lot more. So there's definitely different things going on there. But I don't think women generally do real well on low-carb diets, and I mean below 20%, even below 30%. Some do, and they thrive on it, and they'll swear that it's the best for everybody. But there's no one diet that fits everybody. But I think women, a good place for women to start, and really for anybody to start, men and women, is just a good balance, like the Zone diet, what Barry Sears says, 30% protein, 40% carbs, 30% fat. That's a great starting point, in my opinion. And you may need to play with those numbers, where maybe it's more protein, less carbs, maybe it's less protein, more fat. Play around with the numbers a little bit, but that's a great starting point because it's nice and balanced. 3 to 5 meals a day is a good starting point as well. Other people do really well on one big meal and snacking, kind of like the warrior diet. So all of these different diets work as long as you follow the principles of focusing on real high-quality food.
And the flip side for guys, you know, you're not giving them a free pass to go ahead and load up on the bacon and steak and stuff. You said explicitly, you know, with the high quality. So it still takes effort to eat high quality foods. And do you think men have a tendency to more overdose on their protein intake?
Yeah, I would say men definitely overdose on protein, if anything, more by default, because being a big meat eater is often associated with being, I'm a man, I eat a lot of meat, and I eat whatever meat I want, and I eat a lot of ribs, steak, and this day I'm going to go to the barbecue this weekend and do this and that and so forth. So men generally, if you look at the way food is marketed towards men, it's usually marketed more in terms of excess rather than diets are basically marketed towards women a lot more because they're a lot more receptive than men are. An example is there's this company called the Hungry Man or the Big Man or something like that where you basically buy 3 pounds worth of meat for $5, something like that. And these commercials basically show like this big fat guy pushing the skinny vegetarian dude out of the way and going, I'm a real man. I'm going to eat this big meal here. So, you know, if it's the way society looks at men and different and men and women is a lot different in the sense that for men, it's more important that you make a lot of money and have status. You can be a big fat guy and still be considered very powerful if you make a lot of money and are very successful in whatever your career path is. For women, there's a lot of pressure to look a certain way. So if a woman's overweight and she's a very successful professional, she's still going to be deemed a failure from a society standpoint just because of that not having the physical area addressed. So yeah, there's definitely different ways, things that are going on there. And no doubt you need a lot of good protein to put on muscle, to get stronger, and so forth. But one thing we have to realize is that a lot of the high protein recommendations come from bodybuilding magazines. Bodybuilding magazines are basically sponsored by supplement companies, and supplement companies, the number one product that supplement companies sell is protein powder. And the way to get you to buy more protein powder and use more protein powder is to convince you that you need more protein. So if you're convinced that you need 1 to 2 grams of protein per pound, meaning that a 200-pound male needs a minimum of 200 grams and more likely possibly 400 grams of protein, there's no way you're going to get that from just food. No matter how, you'd have to eat a lot of meat to get even the 200, but to get to 400, forget it. It's not going to happen. You'll be on the can all day. You'll be bloated and constipated all day long. So that's where these protein powders come into play. And it's funny because the doses keep on getting bigger and bigger. It started off like, I'm sure you remember, if you look back at the late 80s, early 90s, it was, oh, our protein shake has 30 grams of protein. That's all you need. And then all of a sudden another company would say, oh, well, ours has got 40. And then another company would say, ours has got 50. And I think it even went up to 65 or so until it finally just kind of flattened out at that point, where you're buying these meal replacement powders where you have 60 grams of protein per serving. It just got to these ridiculous extremes. And what's funny is I heard this interview on Super Radio. And you can go there, superradio.com. It's archived. I forget the name of the doctor who did a study. But he found that 20 grams of protein after a workout is basically the maximum that you need to get the anabolic responses, the protein synthesis and whatnot. And when you go beyond 20 grams, the rest just goes to energy production rather than going into your muscles for growth and recovery. So no doubt we need a lot of protein. I'm not a guy who recommends low-protein diets. That's ridiculous, and you're going to feel like crap and have poor hormone production and poor muscle growth. But I don't think we need anywhere near as much as we've been led to believe by a lot of uncredible sources.
No, and I have a personal interest in that because I know I've been emailing you occasionally on my own personal interest because I've always had trouble with digestion issues and, you know, couldn't sort of track a lot of the inflammation and bloating that I was experiencing and couldn't correlate that to anything. And, you know, finally decided to give some of the stuff you were recommending a try. And, you know, it definitely made a big difference. So I was wondering if you could delve a little bit into the idea, because it seems like a lot of people are jumping on board. You know, it used to be very taboo to say you're a vegetarian or that you didn't eat meat because, you know, like you just mentioned that commercial, you're a girly man. Come on. You can't be a real man if you don't eat meat.
But well, you know, what's funny about it is this. If you go to Gold's Gym Venice, it's a very famous gym. If you've ever been to L.A., most of us have been there at one point in our lives or not. But I know a lot of guys who used to work out there, still work out there, and they say that most of these bodybuilders, they can fart on command because they're consuming so much protein that they're just basically having a very gassy system from all of the excess. So, I mean, that's the end result of consuming way too much protein. And you can do an experiment with yourself. I mean, try if you're taking 100 grams of protein right now, try going up to 300 for a day or two. And believe me, you're going to be bloated and gassy and probably going to lose a lot of friends. And those kind of side effects are really not going to give you a better workout. Let's be honest. You don't want to have a bloated, gassy system when you're trying to get a good workout in.
And absolutely. I think a lot of these people are also, you know, just as the protein powders you're recommending are having a lot of contribution to a lot of these issues. I know, you know, a lot of friends and myself, and you take these what are supposed to be good, clean protein powders, and they make you sicker than anything.
Yeah, a lot of the protein powders, unfortunately, are very low quality. They're very processed to the point where your body often rejects it, doesn't even really accept it as real food. And you can always – you don't even have to ask for somebody else's opinion because you know whether it's working for you or not. Like, for example, if you take a protein powder, whatever the background is, whatever the manufacturer claims, if you get gassy and bloated after you drink it, obviously it's not a fit for you. Obviously your body is rejecting it. Maybe you have an allergy to the ingredients. Maybe it's just a low-quality piece of crap product with a lot of chemical fillers and so forth in it. So you always want to look for a very clean protein powder. I mean, I like Sun Warrior Rice Protein. Obviously, I have a vested interest in that, which I'll be honest about because I sell it on my website. But I also use it personally. And all of my customers, I've sold hundreds of containers of it. I've only had one person who didn't like it, and that person didn't like the taste of it. So most people really like it. I really like that one. A good dairy product, Ori Hofmeckler makes an organic whey protein from grass-fed cows, And my wife uses that. She really likes it. And I know a lot of people who use that. They really like that as well. So, again, these products are more expensive. But, again, here's the kicker. You don't have to take as much to get the effect. One, we don't need as much protein as a lot of the different sources out there say we do, in my opinion. And number two, you're better off getting 20 grams of a very, very high quality protein rather than 50 grams of junk and just giving yourself the illusion that somehow more is better. It's the quality you want to focus on, just like anything else you do in life. When you work out, you want to focus on quality. You want to focus on the exercises that give you the most bang for your buck and do the exact dose that's going to give you the results you want. With your business, you want to be as efficient as possible. You don't want to waste a lot of time on things that don't work. Our bodies are always going to try to be as efficient as possible with whatever we give it. You know, the human body is very resilient. It has a way of bouncing back from really bad things. And it's amazing to me when I see people's grocery carts, because more often than not, there's not one thing in there that's real food. It's all packaged junk, processed garbage, and this is what people are surviving on, and they're actually living still. They're actually surviving on this. I mean, are they feeling good? Are they living well? Probably not. But the fact that they're even alive and that's what they're consuming every day just shows you how resilient the human body is at trying to make the best of whatever you give it.
Well, now, how do you, it's funny, I've had discussions recently with a lot of people like to argue the whole idea of, well, you know, from an evolutionary standpoint, we were meant to eat, you know, mostly just meat, and a lot of this other stuff is just junk. You know, the Paleolithic idea and concept. Well, what's your view when people sort of try to argue that point?
Well, I never really argue with people. I say, look, if you believe that and it works for you, great. Go good for you. And I can understand where that argument's coming from. I mean, if you look at a lot of people that still live in the jungle, in the wild, like, for example, the Maasai in Kenya, and I've been to Kenya many times, and I've seen how these people live and what they look like, and they look great, and they basically live off a diet of whatever they hunt, maybe some vegetables, and often they often drink cow's milk with actual blood in it, and that's basically their diet. And these people, and they don't brush their teeth, and they have no tooth decay, they have great skin, the men are often very lean, you don't see anybody who's overweight. So I can understand where that mentality is coming from. But there's other parts of the world that basically subsisted on a vegetarian-type diet, India being an example. And Indians are not known for being dumb people, they're known for being very smart people. It's one of the fastest-growing countries right now in terms of economic growth and whatnot. So clearly they're not on deficient diets where their brain's not being fed properly and so forth. People from the Paleolithic standpoint will probably say, well, they're on average a lot smaller than other people. And yeah, there's some truth to that. But again, I think these arguments on what's natural or not are just kind of laughable because, again, we don't live in a natural world anymore. We live in houses, we drive cars, we use machines to make our meals and whatnot. So what worked for prehistoric people is not necessarily what's going to be ideal for us. And yeah, you want to go for, we're basically evolved to eat real food. That part I agree with. Fruits and vegetables should be our carbohydrate sources. I'm not an anti-meat person in the sense of I don't think we're meant to eat meat or not. I do it for ethical reasons, not for health reasons. So it's not so much that I feel that a vegetarian diet is superior for performance or for health. I'm coming from more the ethical standpoint, my belief system. So I don't really argue with people in terms of saying what I do is better than what you do, what you're doing is better than this and that and so forth. I just have the results to back up what I do. So what I won't accept from people is people telling me, well, look, you know, what you're doing is not working. It's like, well, come over and train anytime you want, and I'll show you what I can do. We'll see what you can do, and then we'll draw our own conclusions. And am I the strongest guy in the world? No, but I've achieved what I think are some good goals, and I'm happy with where I'm at, and I can get stronger doing what I'm doing. And again, it all comes back more to creating that optimal hormone environment. And I have a good hormone environment right now. I've got great DHE levels and GH and testosterone and all that, and those are the things that are very important to getting bigger and stronger and leaner and feeling good. So people can argue all day long, and people love to do it. If you go on any message board any day, you'll see people argue on anything all day long. I mean, right now there's a lot of wars going on what's the proper use of a kettlebell. You have some people saying it's only for jerks and snatches for 10-minute sets. You have other people saying, no, the best way is to treat it as a weight training tool and not do all the time sets and endurance. And then you have people with these vehement arguments where they're really into it. And I think people do that because they just get off on it. They have fun with these debates, and that's fine. You know, go ahead and do that, but I'm not going to debate with people over stuff that I think is a waste of time. I mean, if people want to do what I'm doing, I'll show them how to do it. I don't go out there and try to preach to people. I don't say, hey, everybody should be doing what I'm doing. I'm just saying, here, I have found what works for me without compromising my belief system. If it's something that you would like to learn more about, if it's something you want to do yourself, I'm happy to help you with it, but I'll help you with whatever you're doing. So a lot of my clients are meat eaters. I don't try to tell them to stop eating meat. I work with them on whatever they're wherever they're at, whatever they're comfortable doing, and go from there. So the bottom line is, to make a long story short, you can be very healthy as a meat eater. I won't dispute that point. You can be very healthy as a vegetarian. And the Paleolithic diet is great for a lot of people. I believe with the principles of that. But is it the be-all, end-all of diet? No.
And, you know, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, people argue about everything. You know, people argue about which fruits and vegetables they should eat and so forth. I think people start to nitpick the wrong things. But, you know, when you're talking to, you know, real people, you know, I get all the time, you want to roll your eyes. But I'm interested to see how you motivate and inspire people when they go, Mike, this sounds great, but I don't have the time to do sit there and cook every one of my meals and prepare foods. I got kids. I got a job. You know,
I'm the anti-motivator. I'm the anti-inspirer. And I'm the ultimate no excuse person. So what I do is I don't even take those kind of people on as clients. You know, Mahler's Aggressive Strength, I paint the picture of my business and what kind of people I want to work with in a very straightforward manner. So people that come to me with a bunch of excuses, I don't even have that happen because those people don't come to me. They go to somebody else, and I encourage them to go to somebody else. And I'm not that person who's going to sit there and say, okay, poor you, you know, oh, no, you got kids, you got this, you don't have time. You know, the average American watches 4 hours of TV per night. So if I were going to take on a client like that and they gave me all those factors, I would say, okay, do you own a TV? And if they say yes, and I would say, well, then you have time. Because don't tell me that you own a TV and it's off all the time. You know, right. I guarantee you it's on for at least a couple hours if you own one. But at the same time, a lot of these things don't take a lot of time either once you get used to it. In the beginning, it's a lifestyle change, but it doesn't have to be something that's overly time consuming. I mean, most of my dinners, I just load it up in a steam cooker, turn it on, come back a half hour later, and I'm ready to eat. So again, it's not a lot of time consuming stuff. Me personally, I don't eat a lot of meals during the day. I like to have a protein shake after my morning workout, and then I'll snack on a lot of nuts and seeds and salads, which are quick foods, which require no preparation or very minimal. Then I'll save my cooked meal for later on in the evening when I want to go into a relaxed state and kick back. So you can modify things a lot to take it to your lifestyle, and also just do the best that you can within your lifestyle. You don't have to be a perfectionist. You don't have to stress out over this. And that becomes another problem, is people start stressing out over, oh, I didn't have this for breakfast, or, oh, man, I forgot to take my pomegranate juice today, or, oh, no, I missed my workout today. I'm going to lose. My whole body's going to shrink overnight. You get these people that are on the opposite spectrum of average person who doesn't like to work out at all, where they're paranoid. Like, they take a week off from working out, they're going to lose everything. And we hear this kind of stuff all the time. And there's a great book called The Adonis Complex about people that are so paranoid about losing muscle tissue that they'll start banging off push-ups in the men's room during every lunch break or every 20 minutes to make sure that they have their pump all the time. And here's where we start going into very unhealthy area. And what's ironic is that a lot of people that are really into fitness are some of the most unhealthy people you will ever meet in terms of their mentality and view of themselves and even their physiology, because they're stressed out and maybe taking a lot of fat burners and so forth unnecessarily so. Like a lot of fitness competitors, I shouldn't say a lot, I'll say some fitness competitors, they're not healthy. They may look good from the outside, they get the nice bodies and all that, but inside there's a lot of turmoil and unhealthy things going on. Same thing with a lot of people that are bodybuilders and work out really hard. In fact, a lot of bodybuilders don't even have high testosterone. They probably started off with high testosterone, but they've burned out their body for so long that their hormones are ridiculously low. A lot of professional athletes, too. There's a lot of professional athletes that are just so burned out from all the cortisol, which causes a lot of estrogen production to occur, and their healthy hormones start going down the drain. You look at some of these guys at the end of their career, they look terrible. They don't look anything like they did when they first started.
So, Mike, you know, I'm just thinking, though, we've become a culture that lives, like you mentioned, off coffee, energy drinks, so forth and so forth. Now, where does
it's not even an energy drink, it's the illusion of energy drink.
Yeah. Well, you know, and what that definitely corresponds with, people start, I think one of the most common things is people start suffering from adrenal strain. And, you know, and I think that's one of the most prevalent problems along with the testosterone. So how could, if someone feels like, hey, they're trying to eat the best they can, they're trying to work out, you know, what's the next step? You know, what do they do from there? You know, is it supplements? Is it?
I mean, you got to get your sleep optimized. So whatever you need to make changes, whatever you need to do in your life to optimize your sleep is critical, because nothing's going to take the place of that. No supplements. No, you can't buy it. You have to get sleep. It's something you need. That's when a lot of your hormone production occurs, testosterone, especially growth hormone. So if your sleep sucks, your hormone production is going to be bad. I don't even have to look at somebody's blood work. If they tell me their sleep is terrible, they're an insomniac, and maybe they only sleep a couple hours a night, they wake up groggy and feel terrible, dragging through the day, they need to have three pots of coffee to make it through the day, you already know that person's in a terrible hormonal situation. I always tell people, I go, the best thing you can do for growth hormone production doesn't cost you a dime. You got to sleep more. You got to get more sleep in. And then some people will be sarcastic and say, oh, well, that does cost me because I could have been working, and I need to work more to make more money, so I'm losing money if I sleep more. It's like, all right, people, you've got much bigger problems in your life if that's your mentality right there. This whole go, 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 go at whatever cost is not the way you want to go, because when you start developing all the health problems and you hit that wall, you're going to wish that you made some changes before that happened. So you got to get your sleep in there. And if you can only get 5 hours or 6 hours of sleep at night, try to get in a nap at some point during the day. Maybe take a half-hour nap after you work out. I really like a meditation program called Holosync. You just put it in your iPod. You put some headphones on. It puts into a nice, relaxed state. I always listen to that for about a half hour after I work out, and then I listen to it for another half hour before I go to sleep. That really helps induce you into that relaxation phase. One of the reasons why people have a hard time sleeping is because they're taking so many stimulants, coffee and whatnot, a lot of sugar also, which is a stimulant that really jacks up your hormones and makes you feel crappy. So you're tired, but you can't sleep. That's the irony right there, is that you're wiped out, but you can't fall asleep because you're in such a declined state of hormones that you feel terrible. Your body doesn't have the necessary tools to make melatonin and put you in that relaxed state so you can fall asleep. So there's people that are wiped out all the time, yet they can't sleep even when they get a chance to. So sleep is critical. You have to do what it takes to get that in. And I noticed a big difference in my well-being when I made a point of saying, you know what, no matter what, get that 7 hours minimum of sleep every night. More is better, up to about 9 hours. You don't want to sleep 12 hours, start feeling like crap. You can get too much sleep, or it has the reverse effect where you wake up and you're tired the whole day now. So, but you want to get – most people are sleep deprived. Most people are not getting too much sleep. That's critical for everything else. And if people say they can't increase their sleep, I'm like, well, there's not really much I can do for you, because I can make all the supplement recommendations in the world, but they're not going to take the place of that. It's like someone saying, I don't want to do anything with – I don't want to change anything with my diet, but what supplements can I take to make up for it? I go, none. Because that's the illusion a lot of people have. They take their one-day multivitamin and they think, okay, cool, I'm set for the day now, and now I can just go eat hot dogs and French fries and potato chips and be fine. And obviously, if you look around at our society right now, we're fatter and unhealthier than we've ever been in the history, probably in the history of mankind ever. And it's ridiculous that we're the wealthiest nation, although that's starting to go down faster than we would like, but we're still the wealthiest nation, yet we're probably the unhealthiest one as well.
So, I mean, are you a big believer then in things like, you know, not having the TV in the bedroom and setting a time, no matter what you're doing? You know, I know there's optimal times to try to go to bed. Are you a big believer in those type of theories as well?
Yeah, you know, I'm a little bit more lax on stuff like that. For example, I mean, my schedule would be deemed as not optimal by a lot of people. I mean, I go to sleep around 2 a.m. I wake up at 10, and it works for me. A lot of people would say, well, you need to go to sleep by 9 p.m., otherwise your hormone production is going to be compromised. And I've proven otherwise personally. Can that work for everybody? I don't know. But I think it has more to do with you work with the schedule that's right for you. So if you're someone who likes to stay up a little bit later and – just make sure you get to sleep. You make sure you get to sleep whenever you can. So if you go to sleep at 2, you can't wake up at 6 now. You have to wake up later than that. If you need to wake up at 6, you need to go to sleep earlier. So if you have a 9-to-5 job, you need to modify your schedule to that. One thing is, it's very important for whatever room you're sleeping in to be very, very dark. If there's even a little bit of light coming through, that will keep you up. That actually will increase your cortisol levels, which is an energizer. You know, cortisol is known as a stress hormone, but it's more of an anti-stress hormone. It's what comes into play to help you manage stress. But once sunlight starts coming through the room or artificial light, that's your body is getting a signal that it's now time to wake up and get going. So you start. You're not going to get a nice, deep, melatonin, high-induced sleep with a lot of light on. So if you can't make the room as dark as possible, then get an eye mask at least and just block out that light as much as possible.
So, you know, if someone's now, okay, we got our sleep going pretty well, nutrition is doing as good as possible, you know, what's the next area you start looking at?
But then I would start looking at, okay, how do we optimize your training? And what you want to do is make sure you're doing some high-intensity cardiovascular-type training because that's really good for not only your brain health, getting a lot of oxygen throughout your body, but also great for hormone production. An example that I really like is sprinting. And you just go out, a lot of nice fields in my neighborhood, so I'll just go out there with my dogs and I'll do 10 100-yard sprints where I run as fast as I can for 100 yards, walk back to the starting point, run again, and you feel like $1 million after you do that. I mean, you feel really good and ready to attack your day. It's a great way to start off your day. Do some joint mobility to loosen up before you go out there and do some running and so forth. If you're really tight, you might need to do some jogging or just walk around a little bit more to get looser, really get loose and ready to roll. But that's a great workout system to get in early in the day because it'll give you a nice GH boost, in my opinion. It also will oxygenate the brain, so your brain feels really good. And it also releases some good-feeling hormones. You get that endorphin rush and all that. Also, it's a powerful fat-burning system as well. So for people who want to lose weight, you know, sprinting in this manner or some kind of high-intensity interval training is the way to go rather than just doing long, sustained aerobics indefinitely. So that's one thing I would definitely get in people's programs. And then you want to do some weight training where it's pretty heavy stuff, 80% of your one rep max, or at least 70 to 80%. And depending on where the person is, if they're beginning training for the first time, or maybe they have someone who has been working out for a while, or someone who's getting back into it, you have to modify the intensity to wherever the person is at. But weight training is very important because you want to build as much muscle mass as possible. And when I say muscle mass, it doesn't mean you have to become very big and bulky. You know, women in particular have this paranoia of if they just even look at a weight, they're going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is just ridiculous when you consider how hard it is for men to put on muscle, and men have 10 times higher testosterone levels than women. That it's ridiculous that women have that paranoia, but it is there. But what they don't realize is that the more muscle mass they have, and it doesn't have to be size. It can just be, you can be very dense and lean, nice looking muscle, the much easier it's going to be to keep that fat off and also have a better hormone environment and just look and feel better.
So I think people would be surprised how short your workouts probably are too, huh?
Yeah, I'm very into. I mean, I've been working out a long time. I'm 35. I've been working out since I was 18. So I've been through it all. I've been through the really high volume workouts. I've been through all the isolation where you do an exercise for every single muscle group imaginable when you do a lot of sets. I've done the split routines where I've done routines where you work on one muscle group per day and all that. So I know how my body responds to different things. And you know, as you get older and you have other things going on and you want to get the most bang out of your buck, you start moving towards efficiency, whether it's your business or your workouts or whatever facet of your life it is. You want to be as efficient as possible and you want to get the most bang for your buck. So I like to focus on compound exercises such as trap bar deadlifts is one thing I really like right now. That's a great lower body move. It's a full body strengthener because, I mean, you really feel it everywhere when you do it right. It really builds up the legs and the back. The back is very important. Not enough people do back training because we tend to work on what we see in the mirror. So unless you're holding a mirror in front of you and facing the mirror behind you, you're not really seeing your back a whole lot, right? So we tend to look at what's in front of us, biceps and chest and midsection and whatnot, and we focus in those areas, but you really want to focus on having a big, strong back, not big, but just a strong back, strong hamstring, strong glutes, have that whole posterior chain really strong, and you won't have to worry about having a lot of back problems and things like that as you get older. And then I like to do a lot of overhead pressing. Rather than bench pressing, I like the overhead press because, not to use a word that's been beaten down to a pulp, but functional. It's more functional in the sense that you're standing up and pressing a weight overhead. So your body has to have a strong foundation in order to even handle that weight going overhead. You don't have a bench to push your body into. So you're getting more benefit from doing an overhead press than a bench press, in my opinion. Also, overhead pressing will carry over to the bench press way more than benching will carry over to overhead presses. You can develop a really strong overhead press and not even bench press and have some pretty decent numbers on bench pressing, but not the other way around. And then I like to do a lot of rowing type movements, whether it's a pull up or a bent over row. These are also important movements that are not real sexy. That's why a lot of people avoid them. No one gets excited about doing bent over rows. You don't see someone going, oh man, bent over rows is on my workout plan today. I can't wait to jump into that one. You know, people just don't really like these moves. And I understand that. It's not my favorite stuff either. But if you want to get good at the things you like, you have to do a lot of the things that you don't like. And that's basically how you discipline yourself to do a lot of these different moves. And once you start seeing the results, at that point you're a professional in terms of the way you look at your training, and you're willing to do the necessary steps to get the most bang for your buck. But I like to focus on, again, those compound exercises which give you the most bang for your buck. I really like double kettlebell swings. That's my favorite kettlebell move. I love double kettlebell clean and presses. I love the trap bar deadlifts, pull-ups, sprinting, weight vest walks. I really get into all that stuff because you really feel the difference early on, and you really start noticing differences in your physique on a whole body level rather than an isolation level. And also, quick point with kettlebells is that people always go, well, what's better, double kettlebell work or single kettlebell work? And there's pros and cons to both, but what I have found is this. If I focus on double kettlebell military presses, my one arm will go way up, no problem. If I focus on one-arm kettlebell presses and don't do any doubles, it has no effect beneficial on my double pressing. So in my opinion, to save time, I just focus on doubles because I'll get better at singles without even working on singles. I get better at one-arm snatches by doing a lot of double swings because it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. If I do double swings with two 97-pound kettlebells, I'm working against nearly 200 pounds. So I'm developing some really powerful hip drive and weight management in terms of handling that momentum. So if I go to a 105-pound kettlebell, yeah, it's really heavy for a unilateral move, but at the same time, my body is only working against 105 as opposed to 200 pounds. So for one of the things I like to do, I like to focus on the few things that I like to do that carry over well to other things. And you start realizing this as you work out more. You get more in tune with your body. You start realizing what you respond to best. And this is one of the things I help clients with is let's focus this on some basic moves, and then we'll bring in some variations of those moves because we're going to start finding moves that you really respond well to. And then those will be the ones that we'll want to focus on, and we'll keep variety in there. But let's focus on some of the things that your body responds to best. And I think a lot of trainers make the mistake of just putting their clients on whatever program they're doing. And you see this all the time. And it's a huge mistake. It's like putting them on whatever diet you're on or recommending whatever job you do to them. I mean, personalization, in my opinion, is the future, or even now, it's the present, is the future of effective training, because books and videos are great. You and I make great videos and ebooks, and they're fantastic, and they're great reference tools, and they're really, really good for people on a budget. They're not overly expensive. But until that person personalizes what they're learning from us, either themselves or through us or through another credible coach, they're not going to get the full benefits in the most efficient manner.
So if someone says, you know, Mike, well, I need a personalized program, what's your first, and then they may not be willing to commit to working with, let's say, yourself or myself, you know, how do they start reading themselves and knowing what works? Is it just simply just...
My attitude is, look, if you're not going to pick somebody else to do the research and due diligence for you, then you're going to have to do it yourself. So if someone comes to me and says, I don't want to pay for your personalized program, I say, fine, it's a free country, you do whatever you want. But don't email me asking for free advice either, because that's not fair. I'm a professional. I want to be treated like a professional. I put a lot of great free information on my website for people to do their own research. So if you don't want to pay somebody else to help you with that personalization, that's fine. Do it on your own. Just realize that it's probably going to take a lot longer for you to figure out what works than it would have if you actually worked with someone who knows what he or she is doing.
And for those that have, you know, I think a lot of people are suffering from exercise ADD right now. They want to do everything and really get good at nothing. You know, it sounds like you're trying to get people to focus on the big bang, whatever that is, for themselves, right? They don't have to do
absolutely.
They don't have to be good at every single exercise.
The most common response I get when I design a program for somebody and they take a look at it, they're like, this is it. This is all I'm going to be doing. And I say, look, man, just jump into it and then get back to me. And they're always amazed on okay, it was a lot harder than it looked, because just because we're doing less doesn't necessarily mean it's easy. We're just focusing on stuff that's going to give you more bang for your buck, and deadlifts are a lot harder than curls. 3 sets of 5 on heavy deadlifts is a lot harder than 10 sets of 10 on curls, because it's a much more effective exercise, and it's a lot more work, and thus it's a lot more effective. So let's not waste time with things. People complain about being busy, not having enough time. Well, that's great, because my system is the perfect avenue for you, because I don't like wasting time either, even though I've got plenty of time on my hands. You know, I've created a business model where I've got a nice passive income, so I could train 4 hours a day if I wanted to and sleep 10 hours every night if I wanted to at this point in my life. I don't do it, though, because I know it's not effective. So what's funny is, whether you have time or not, a lot of the principles are going to be the same. So what, not having enough time is rarely an excuse, but at the same time, you don't want to fall prey to really shady marketing moves, such as these ridiculous 10-minute workouts that we see on infomercials at night. You get these idiots selling these 10-minute programs where someone says, look, just work out 10 minutes 5 times a week and you're going to have the body of your dreams. That's ridiculous. You're not going to get the body of your dreams with those kind of workouts. But I will predicate it with this. If you really want to get great benefits from a 10-minute workout, you better be prepared to suffer through the hardest 10 minutes of your life, because that's what it's going to take to have a great 10-minute workout. It's not going to be you put on a clock for 10 minutes and then dick around in the gym with one exercise or not and go, okay, cool, I got my 10 minutes in, or get on a treadmill for 10 minutes and say, great, I got that in, or do a walk around the block and say, cool, I got my 10 minutes in, now I'm going to have the body of my dreams. You better be prepared to work. You know, everything in life is an exchange. So if you want something, you have to ask yourself, what are you willing to exchange for that?
I think that's very sound advice, and what I always, you know, appreciate about you, Mike, is that you're very honest and tell it really the truth. I mean, and it, sometimes people don't like to hear it, but they need to sometimes hear that truth to get on the right track. So, you know, we're sort of winding down an hour, and I sort of appreciate you spending the time. I know you have a very busy schedule. If people want to start on this process, they want to start learning more and educating themselves, you know, where do you recommend them start? Do they go to your website? Are there books they should be reading?
Well, there's a lot of things that people can do. I mean, if people want to see my perspective on hormone optimization, they can pick up my latest video set, which is called Collision Course, and it's the last two-day workshop that I filmed with Mark Phillippe and John Brookfield and John Hines and Dylan Thomas and Tom Furman. I put together this really nice lineup of people, and we covered everything from battling ropes to strongman training to kettlebells through some martial arts stuff. I gave a lecture on optimization.